Kia ora koutou, and welcome to another episode of South Pacific Muscle. I've got Mike on my left here, but not the usual Mike. So, Mike Alussi, welcome on board, bro. How are you?
Thanks, Nate. Thanks for having me. Good, bro.
Awesome, man. And Mr. Tab, how are you doing, brother?
Oh, you know, I won't bore you.
joys of teaching, eh, bro?
I didn't teach today. Migraines last night, so I stayed home. But I had to go to the gym at midday and got busted by some school kids and a couple of teachers at school. So took the day off school and went to the gym and got
shame
busted.
Shame of it. The shame of it. So for those that haven't come across Mike, we'll show you a bit of his Insta a bit later. But Mike's training out in Melbourne and just come out of lockdown back into the gym.
Yeah, I think lockdown number 144 for Melbourne. These days, but it's good to be back out of lockdown, back to some sort of normality, although over here you sort of never feel quite, you know, too far from a pending lockdown, because it seems at the slightest, you know, sneeze, everyone's running for the hills. So yeah, it's tough. Yeah. But yeah, you adapt.
I've caught a lot of the commentary with Tony Doherty coming on and saying that the industry's really taking a beating and just some real mad things like brothels are open, but gyms aren't open.
Yeah, again, so, you know, when the chief health officer they keep referring to says that all the data says that, you know, they make decisions based on science and facts, but then they let brothels open and then they keep gyms
face
closed.
Mask, got to wear a mask.
Yeah, got to wear a mask, got to social distance while, you know, servicing or whatever else they do. What are they doing there? But it's just crazy. I mean, that I think that, you know, everyone's seen the data now, you know, millions and millions of check-in points across Australia, not just Victoria, but across Australia, and not one COVID case, you know, linked to any of those check-ins. They claim that in Victoria there was 27 cases, I think, last lockdown. But that was like a home gym. It was literally a guy's backyard, or, you know, a garage that he converted into a gym with some, you know, a rack and some dumbbells, and then there was 27 cases linked to that that garage. It wasn't a gym, but because there was people training there, that's why they say gyms are so dangerous. So it just seems absurd, like, really, you know, because we know that, I know over here, and again, you guys have seen Tony being very vocal about it as well, the fact that, you know, we sanitize, we clean, we wipe up after ourselves, we check in, you know, members, casuals, everyone's accounted for in and out of the doors. But you've got places like, you know, Coles and Woolworths and shopping centers open, and, you know, now they at least are asking you to check in to say, hey, we've been here, through the QR code system. But I mean, you say, yeah, I'll check in, and no one checks. So you've got thousands and thousands of people in and out of these places, you know, and there's no accounting for any of them, really. Yeah. But at the gym, you can control that. But yet there seems to be some vendetta against the industry, which is hard, because I know Tony well. I know a lot of the gyms that, you know, we're involved with who struggle, you know, mm-hmm. And it's really, really hard.
Yeah, man. I've just see Wellington is at level 2, courtesy of an Australian that flew over and visited everywhere under the sun in Wellington. So for those people in Wellington that are having to isolate, I know not all of you are, but if you're at some of those places, guys, hopefully that passes pretty soon and we get lots of negative tests. But kind of want to get back to normal. So let's all do the right thing. And luckily our government's been pretty sensible about what it's choosing to shut down and what it's not. So
it seems to be, yeah, for sure. And that's what it looks like from over here. It looks like that, you know, New Zealand has somewhat handled it, you know, reasonably well compared to, again, what we're going through. And again, make no mistake, I say it's hard to be in lockdown, but I see what's happening in, like, you know, India and even the US, like, you know, and it's crazy over there, like, you know, really crazy. I've got friends over there. I've only ever heard of one person say to me that they actually know someone who died of COVID. Only one person, and that person was in Turkey. I don't know anyone else who's got COVID, who's contracted COVID, who's, you know, been, you know, health-wise affected by COVID. But look, I've got no doubt there's, you know, there's something out there, and it affects a lot of people, you know, health-wise. Unfortunately, it seems that in Australia, it's affecting a lot of people mentally and financially more than anything else, which is, you know, and socially, because people are getting, you know, isolated.
Yeah, Yeah, 100%, man. That's one of the things I always worry about is, you know, we shut down, and for good reason we do, but then, you know, you've got a bunch of people that lose their social network, and for some people, well, for a lot of people, the gym's therapy, man, and, you know, and they lose it. So anyway, here's hoping on to better times.
Absolutely.
Now, I saw a little photo. I might just bring this up, Mike, so people can see what we're talking about. But I saw you popped a photo up on Insta the other day. And for those that don't follow Mike, jump on there. Live Like Mike, One Team.
Live Like Mike, One Team.
Yep, so get on there. But I see you're 17 weeks out, sitting at about 125-ish.
Yeah, 125. I sort of hover at the moment. I've just cut down my calories to about 5,000, which is definitely a deficit for me at this stage anyway. I push around 7,500 when I'm trying to grow or put on size, which is a lot of food, and it's hard to get down, especially on the digestive system. Yeah, and not that weight's everything, but for whatever reason, I mean, I have a higher weight than most. And, you know, I would like to think that I stay fairly lean year round. You know, there's no need for me to really, really push out size. And if anything, because of the amount I have to eat, I'm just scared of my waist getting any bigger than, you know, it already is. So, I mean, at the moment, I have to make my shoulders and back and quads and everything so big because structurally, I haven't got that, you know, 26-inch waist that some people have. But we play to our strengths. So I can put on size and I can get bigger. But more than anything, I'm just trying to stay balanced. So 125, which, you know, for this point, for where I am in terms of how big I look, and look is the most important thing, and how balanced I am, it's the best position I've ever been in, for sure. So I'm really, really excited. We're probably thinking around 118 to 120 on stage.
What height are you, Mike?
176 centimeters, so 5'10".
Yeah, that's a whole lot of size on a 5'10" frame, my friend.
Yeah, so I'm trying to maximize it as much as I can.
I was going to pull up, this last year on stage?
Yeah, that was last year on stage. So I was 116 there.
Nice. So what do you see as your improvements this year that you're going to bring to stage?
Oh, definitely my back thickness, back width, just upper body being more balanced to my lower body. So, you know, I think that when I first competed back in 2015, I felt like my legs were just like, you know, my limbs in general, but my legs, you know, I grew up idolizing, like, you know, Tom Platz, Branch Warren, even Dorian Yates. And, you know, I just sort of was always one of the legs. I wanted just to have massive legs. So over the next, you know, years, not that I didn't train upper body, but I think I brought a level of intensity to my leg training, which, you know, I don't think I've seen in person anyone match. And that's not me being, you know, everyone's got their gifts, but I just have this ability just to switch off and go to an absolute pain threshold, and then extend that even as well from there. And, yeah, it paid off for the legs, but then it became overpowering where I needed to bring up my arms and my back so that I looked more balanced on stage because, you know, I can be bigger than everyone else, but, like, last year when I was against Christian in the pro qualifier and he beat me, and I beat him back in 2018, but he beat me, and look at him, I was bigger. I felt I was better conditioned than him, but he had more balance to his physique. And that was the feedback I got from the judges and Tony. So that's all I got to fix. I mean, and at the end of the day, as much as I love training legs, because that's where I really, really, my therapy, if you like, you know, I've pulled back legs to maybe once a week this whole time. I've never done that before. Just trying to, again, prioritize or give more recovery ability to my upper body, mainly my back, my arms, and my delts. So, and hopefully that pays off. You know, I feel like in pictures, I'm a lot more balanced up to, you know, top to bottom. I feel like for the first time when I turn around and hit like a rear double, you know, I can see pro-ish sort of, you know, pop, pro-ish sort of shape. I can see more, you know, when I hit a lat spread, I seem as wide as what my quad sweep is, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I think that the balance is the biggest thing for me.
Did you have any difficulty maintaining the intensity of your upper body training, having backed off your legs, or is the intensity still there on your legs, just decrease the frequency?
I think the intensity is heightened on the legs because I know it's one day. You know, I train pretty much a Dorian Yates split of, you know, one, maybe two working sets for most of my life. And sort of, so I bring that, you know, you've got one set to make it. And so, so if anything, I think because I know it's my only day, you know, I have to take a rest day after my legs, because it's just like, you know, it's a really a battle for me. But then again, I'm trying to, again, apply that same intensity to, you know, chest, to arms, to back as well. So it hasn't backed off, but I've definitely been able to spread it out, be more evenly across the upper body as well, for sure. And that's just, again, taking on, you know, advice and, hey, you know, it's a sport where we want to be our best. And yes, it's a form of, you know, for me, therapy, and it's how I make my living now. I'll do this full time. But at the end of the day, like, you know, it's a sport where we have to take on the advice and the comments and the feedback from the people who judge us on stage. And, you know, I say this a lot. It's like, you know, you see a lot of bickering back and forwards in the bodybuilding world, you know, at a pro level, I can understand, but at an amateur level, it's like, at the end of the day, guys, we're going to get on stage in X amount of weeks' time, and five strangers are going to judge us, you know, based on what they like, not what we like for about each other. So I think you have to take on that advice. You have to take on the feedback, and to improve, you know, I think judges reward that as well, especially, like, you know, if you compete in Australia, you've generally got the same sort of judges judging you from show to show. You know, Michael Booner being head judge for most of my competing career anyway, as short as that is. But, you know, when they can see you, when they give feedback, when they give, you know, you suggestions and on areas you can improve, and then when they see that on stage, I think they really, really appreciate and reward that. So that's what I'm working towards.
That's a really good point, because we often hark on at people about getting feedback from the judges. And if you're professional about it and you're wanting to improve your physique and your placings, you know, you do have to give the judges what they're looking for. So I guess, you know, what you're saying there is that when you do get that feedback and you take it on board, you're actually rewarded for those improvements, because, you know, the judge that judged you, you know, one, two, three shows ago is going, shit, this guy's actually brought us back up like we told him to. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you're on stage and they're drawn to that, because, like, oh, hang on a second, like, you know, Michael looks better than last time. And then again, like, we can sit here and say, we all have opinions about who looked better on a certain day. You know what I mean? It's always a, you know, again, it's not a sport where, like, powerlifting, if you pick the weight up, you pick the weight up. Like, you know what I mean? It's one of those things. In sprinting, if you're the fastest, that's black and white. But here, it's not. It's you know, how people interpret how you look on stage. It's all an illusion. So, yeah, but when you sort of create that, I suppose the feeling of, oh, Mike's improved a lot here, it draws their eyes to you. And the more they look at you, the more likely you're going to be judged higher in the rank, in the placings anyway.
Hey, do you want to tell us a bit about the Aussie season? Because I know you guys have a season A and a season B. And I'm assuming you guys are coming into season B now. Do you have state qualifiers and then nationals? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so essentially, you know, Tony's putting on what's called the Fit Fest. This year, you know, I think Tony used to run something called the FitX for a number of years, and that converted over into the Arnolds with his partnership, to Lawrence and stuff as well. So I think Tony really missed, you know, back in 2020 when everything was happening with COVID, you know, Tony really wanted to put on a show, you know, and we had state qualifiers, and the Arnold was on, then it was off, then it was on, then it was off, and there was an expo, then it was no expo, and it was really back and forwards, and it was hard being in that time because, you know, like, physically at that point in time, you're ready anyway, well, you know, those last 2 weeks, but it was mentally thinking, like, you know, am I going to compete, am I not, and I know that Tony was working his hardest, and he ended up putting on a show, you know, and it wasn't the Arnolds, but, you know, it was a show, and so we got to stand up there as well, whatnot, but he really wanted to put on season B. He missed out on that opportunity because of COVID, you know, and so then he put on, you know, season A, and even that was touch and go because there was, you know, small lockdowns, you know, here and there, but he did it, and so he's really, really big on making this season B, you know, a big comeback for bodybuilding as well, and I think it'll be really successful because people love those expos, you know what I mean? They're our, it's where we, you know, as an industry, as people who identify, you know, as people who, you know, lift or live a lifestyle, that's, you know, what we determine as bodybuilding or close to it. then it says what we want to do. We want to be around those people and get involved in an event. So yeah, it's the Fit Fest. That season, but there's qualifiers before. They're starting around October, I think the same weekend as the New Zealand Nationals.
The 9th of October.
Yeah, that's when the state qualifiers start, and over the next 3 weeks. And then November 6th is the actual Nationals / Fit Fest pro qualifier in Australia.
I was aware of Fit Fest, but I didn't put two and two together that the Nationals were at Fit Fest. So
on the main stage, yeah, for sure.
For Kiwis down that we got the bubble, I know a few of you have been talking about going to Fit Fest, so even more motivation to get over there now and see the best of what Aussie's got on stage this year.
Yeah, it will be a massive show. Like, I think that from the people who, you know, again, they say they're competing now, hopefully everyone, you know, follows through their prep and has no injuries and anything along the way. But, you know, people haven't competed for a while, it feels like. Even season A, you know, as good as it was to see bodybuilding, it wasn't a level or didn't have the depth that we normally expect as of late. So, you know, it's going to be great to see so many people, competitors, athletes on stage giving their best because, yeah, they've missed out for a long time. So,
who else are we expecting in the bodybuilding in general? I'm assuming you get the other Mike. Will be joining you,
Mike Pearson. Potentially, I think that he competed season obviously he missed out on the pro card. And look, one of the first times you've seen a super heavy get pushed out of the pro card. Congrats to Brad as well for that. Yeah, it was great. And I thought it deserved it as well, you know, on stage. But Mike, you've got Tim McKinnon from up north.
Yeah, true. Yep.
You know, Tim beat me back in 2019 at my worst, I believe, as well, when I was 103 kilos after a failed prep where I over-dieted too hard. I competed in 2018, 113, then 2019, and I lost by 1 point in 2018 to Arthur at the Nationals. And then I competed in 2019, 103, so I was 10 kilos lighter. So it was just over-dieting. But Tim beat me then. And then there's also, I think, Chris Cavalos is doing it. You've got a couple other names like Lucky, had to Pantala, so he's going to be doing it as well. James Ormsby, I think Sadiq Trevally as well, also will be getting up there. So, you know, then you got other people like, you know, Mike Dawn, even Dean McKillop, you know, a lot of those guys doing the show as well who are great competitors. Mm. So it's going to be a really, really great show and depth across the board, you know, deep lineups, you know, whatever state. And the Nationals should just be epic. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
That sounds like a phenomenal lineup. I mean, I only know probably, you know, a handful of Aussie guys, but, you know, at least five of those names, I know exactly who they are. And, you know, some of those guys have been around for quite a while now and have put quality physiques up there year after year and probably only just missed out on pro cards in previous years.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of guys there who are top contenders, no doubt. You know, I know Tim finished fourth at, you know, Las Vegas Amateur Olympia in 2019. You know, which is no mean feat. He's been, you know, pushing for a Nationals super heavy title. Actually, Chris has beat him twice now, you know, getting controversially or not, but he has beat him twice at Nationals, you know, and Lucky's obviously, you know, well known for what he's done and his comeback. And then James has been around for a long time, you know, James Ormsby. I think he competed in New Zealand for a little while as well. So, yeah, it's going to be really, really good. Deep lineup.
Awesome. Mike, I'm sure you've got something to ask.
I certainly have. I was looking at your Insta and you lift some pretty impressive weights, especially your legs, but I saw some pretty good benching too. Have you modified your training or done anything over the years to protect your joints with all that sort of load?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I've always lifted heavy. I used to use a lot of straps, like, you know, knee straps, knee sleeves, even elbow sleeves as well. I went away from that because I didn't want to I felt like straps, as much as they can protect your joints, they can also mask, you know, niggles and injuries that you should be attending to, if that makes sense. So, for instance, if I wrap up my knees, I can probably put another 20, 30, 40 kilos on in terms of weight, but I'm still causing stress to my joint. And I believe that just because the wrap masks it, like, you know, then I could take the wraps off and be doing a leg extension, then it pops up then. So I stopped using wraps for that. But I've always, you know, watching Dorian Yates, and I've invested a lot of time and money in training with a lot of pros, so like, you know, Milos Sasev, Chris Cormier, you know, Ben Pekulski, Tom Platz, John Meadows, you know, even Dennis James, a lot of pros, and just sort of, you know, observing and really trying to take on principles from all those pros, because I believe that, that success leaves clues. There's no point in me reinventing the wheel. It's just trying to see what others have done and how can I maybe improve or just apply that to my own training. So I've always been a big believer in, you know, just controlled eccentrics mainly. So, you know, really, really controlling on the way down, 2-3 seconds, you know, even though it might be a fast one, but just controlling. If I can't control on the way down, then I won't lift the weight, as simple as that. You know, I don't bounce out of reps, and I spend a lot of time on mobility, so warming up, making sure everything's, you know, feeling good. You know, I have had some knee tendonitis over the years, but I manage that with making sure my glutes, hips, and ankles are, you know, moving well also. So a lot of people, you know, who don't seek out treatment when they feel a niggle, you know, they're going to essentially run into trouble somewhere along the line. You know, I have up to 2-hour treatments weekly with a myotherapist and chiro, because I just, you know, this is what I do for a living. So I want to make sure I can live for as long as possible. But people, you know, don't understand, again, well, maybe just neglect the fact that if they're training 5 to 6 times a week for 1 hour to 2 hours in the gym, you know, that's athlete level. Like, you know, most serious athletes, they would train that much. So they're doing that on top of everything else they're doing in the day, like, you know, working and family and whatever else. So I think that, you know, it's a bit naive to think that they can train like athletes, but then get away with not doing the proper, you know, prehab, rehab that athletes would go through as well. So I've invested a lot of time, money into making sure that I get that treatment so I can keep my body performing in the gym. I was naturally strong, you know, even without training, if that makes sense anyway. I just over, you know, translated that into bodybuilding. Again, taking on Dorian Yates mindset of just recording everything. So progressive overload, stronger each week, you know, and yeah, I've had some really, really, you know, impressive, I suppose, lifts. You know, I've had powerlifters, strongmen come up to me and sort of say, hey, like, you should give it a go. And it doesn't interest me, you know, doing powerlifting or strongman at all. But, you know, I know that if I really push myself, like, I could be a lot stronger. And I've got a 400 kilo squat in me, like, you know, no dramas. I could probably do it now if I worked up to it, but I don't want to because of the risk, you know, it's not there. I think during lockdown, I was working with a safety bar because that's all I had at my house at the start of the first lockdown in Iraq. And within the first 6 weeks, I was up to 300 kilos on a safety squat bar for 8 reps and up to 4 sets. And the thing is that at that weight, you know, it's just too much risk in terms of what can go wrong. But even though I was lifting that weight, it was always with a controlled form. So I think that, you know, really, really controlling the eccentrics and, you know, not letting your ego get the best of you will serve you a long way in terms of, you know, being able to lift, you know, without having those injuries and your niggles that can plague us all for sure. And I've been lucky, you know, touch wood. You know, I've invested time, but there's no doubt there's an element of, you know, it hasn't happened to me. So I'm really thankful for that as well.
You spoke about the warm-ups and the mobility and so on. And when people see, you know, Dorian Yates on Blood and Guts, they see the top 2 sets or so on. So how much you train that style? How much would you do by way of a warm-up before you kind of get to those heavy ones?
So the warm-up for me isn't really about the weight being lifted. So let's say on a hack squat. So I did a hack squat today, just an example. You know, I start off with 1 plate, 2 plates aside, 3 plates aside, 4 plates aside, 5 plates aside, 6 plates, up to 7 plates aside on a Cybex hack squat. Now, those warm-up sets, if you like that, they're more of like an acclimation because I'm just letting the body know that, hey, I'm going to lift weights. And so it's like 3, 4, 5 reps, then rack it. 3, 4, 5 reps, then rack it. You know, I'm not doing, you know, 15-rep warm-up sets, okay? So I work up to a weight for the big movements, you know. But if it's a leg extension, then I'll do maybe one just, again, acclimatizing set where I let the body know this is the range of motion, this is what we're doing right now, and then into a working set. But I will spend 20 minutes prior to any exercises on machines or whatever doing, you know, active stretching. So not really static stretching in terms of like, you know, stretching and holding it stretch, but like, you know, moving through larger ranges of motion for my hip flexors, for my adductors, for my ankles, my glutes, my lower back, my core, making sure everything's turned on. That'll take me 20 minutes, you know, and it's boring. The thing is, sometimes it gets so boring that people don't want to do it because they want to get in the gym to lift. But the minute that I start to neglect that is when the niggles start. That's when at the bottom of my hack squat, I feel my knee twinge. And it's like, you know, my knees are now giving out before my quads. And I really, really, it's the worst day for my wife if that happens, because I'm just a grump for the whole day. If I can't train and perform the way I want to, then I'm not myself. So I realize how important that is for me. And I spend, like I said, a lot of time going through those warm-ups, you know. And I've looked at, like, you know, Charles Poliquin, you know, Andrew Locke, and a lot of guys who are big on movement patterns and mobility, even the Australian strength coach, and just working, trying to, again, take things from them and work into my own. And I've got a really good system now for me that works. And a lot of my clients I share that with as well. And I've had clients who have been like, hey, Mike, you put, you know, hack squat in my program, but I can't do it. Like, you know, just it hurts too much. I said, look, I'm happy to change the exercise, but have you ever tried to find out why you can't hack squat? Like, there must be a reason. And like, oh, no, we've just always just not done it. And I'm like, well, why don't we try, you know, taking proper warm-ups, mobility, and legit giving them the same routine that I do. I said, it's going to take you 15 minutes, but spend the time and do it. And the message back first session is, Mike, no pain, no knee pain, or whatever, no lower back pain. And it's the first time they've spent at any time actually warming up properly. And when I say warming up, not sets on the machine before your working set, but making sure your, you know, ligaments, tendons, everything are, you know, in a range of motion that's going to allow you to perform that range of motion underweight.
I think a really good message for especially us non-professional athletes, people who don't do it for a living. We're always pretty time poor, you know, we're rushing in, rushing out, other obligations to kind of, you know, make that a priority and make that a good proportion of the time that we spend training.
And just on that as well, when it is an issue, because I know some people have, you know, like, you know, there might be FIFO, might have only 45 minutes in the gym, yeah, out in the mining sites, whatever the case may be. But generally speaking, you've got some downtime somewhere in your day. So, you know, doing 15 minutes of stretching before you go to sleep, again, boring. I understand. It's much cooler to scroll through Instagram or whatever, you know, you want to do. But if you spend 15 minutes before bed and, you know, it makes you feel 10 times better the next day or in the morning straight out of bed, then it's worth it. So I think, again, you know, time and money are generally, you know, never the issue when people say they are. It's just prioritizing. So, you know, if you want to lift heavy, if you want to progress your physique, you know, you spend the money on supplements and whatever else, spend the time on making sure that, you know, your body's optimally primed to lift, to progress.
Mike, I'm just going to jump in. I think that's a really good message that, you know, that so many lifters, and myself included, have neglected over the years. And when you pull it apart and give it that attention that you have, Mike, in terms of, you know, if you want it to be a career or you really want to be the best you can be, you know, that's time well spent. And I'm thinking, you know, usually have a pre-workout half an hour before you train. There's half an hour of fucking around in there somewhere that could be better used rather than just sitting around talking to people in the gym while you wait to, you know, get ready to train.
Yeah, you guys can chat still. It's like just chat and move, chat and warm up, chat and, you know, and go through your exercises. Like, you know, it's one of the things where, again, I know it's not cool, you know what I mean? It's much cooler just to squat heavy. But if you take the time, then it'll definitely pay dividends long term. And like I said, I started late. So I started, you know, my first competition 2015. I've been training for 7 years only. You know, my first competition was like 79 kilos. In 2017, I competed at 79 kilos. And now I'm looking to compete at 120 kilos. And so people often ask, like, oh, you know, like, you know, how in 4 years have you put on essentially, you know, 40 kilos of stage weight? And I pay attention to detail. I just, you know, in terms of if there's something that can make me, you know, 1% better in any area, then I'm not afraid to commit the time or resources to prioritize that, you know what I mean? And that means I might have to take away from something else, or just balance things a little bit better. Like, I've got a, you know, wife who supports me. I've got three kids, you know, I work full time. I'm a sole provider. So there's no reason why if I can, and, you know, other people can't either, because I've only started coaching as of COVID. COVID forced me into coaching full time. And it's a blessing in disguise for sure. So you take the blessing from, you know, essentially a bad situation. But before that, I've always had, you know, full-time office jobs, sales jobs on the road and still trying to fit in everything else as well. So, you know, if you want it to happen, there's always a way to make it happen for sure.
Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, my coach has just sent me a new plan and it, I've just started with a new coach. And on my non-training days, he put in half an hour of posing, foam rolling, mobility, stretching, that sort of thing. And I went, fuck, that's a no-brainer. Why have I not been doing that all along, yeah. You know? When I've got, especially I'm not at the gym for an hour, hour and a half. I've got that time. You know, why am I not already doing that? But I wanted to just sandwich that in by kind of what happens at the back end? What do you do at the other end of your training and for recovery sort of post-training?
So post-training, again, like, you know, everyone, I'm always in a rush as well. There's always something to do. So I finish training. I've got to be somewhere or do something. But I do try and spend, you know, 5 to 10 minutes warming down in terms of like I normally sit and just sort of let myself settle. Let my, you know, my blood pressure, you know, my blood sugars, everything settle down. I spend a bit of time static stretching. And then for me, the recovery in terms of that is based around nutrition, being timing, and then also, you know, my treatments. So like I said, I get a 2-hour myo generally every week, maximum 2 weeks, you know, including the chiro sometimes as well. So manipulation and deep tissue massage with needling, scraping, anything that's required except cupping. I hate that. Then I spend a bit of time in the fridge, the cryotherapy chamber. So that's, you know, temperatures minus 140 degrees Celsius. I'll generally do 3 minutes in there, 2 minutes out, 3 minutes back in, you know, once a week, as much as I can as well from that point of view. And those are really my go-tos in terms of recovery and, you know, making sure that I'm ready to go. I notice the biggest improvements in my strength, in my look, in my sleeping when I'm doing regular cryotherapy treatments. So have you guys got access to a cryo chamber over there at all, or?
I would say in Auckland they do, but other than that, maybe in Wellington, but she's pretty limited. We're probably a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of that. I think, I know the rugby boys do things like ice baths and stuff like that, but I don't think they have cryotherapy stuff.
Yeah, so look, ice baths can be very beneficial as well. And in times where, like during lockdown, when I haven't had access to a cryo chamber, I've done ice baths. I've gone to, you know, the local servo, bought 3 bags of ice and filled up the bathtub. And just, you know, hopped in for 5 minutes, hot shower for, you know, 2 minutes, then back in for 5 minutes. And honestly, it sucks again, you know, because like, you know, I personally take it as a challenge as well. Because I'm like, well, hey, if I can do this, I can do anything. Do you know what I mean? And sitting in a, you know, freezing cold bath for 5 minutes sucks, no doubt about it. But you zone out, you develop a mental toughness from doing this as well. And like I said, you develop this ability to say, well, hey, like, if I can do this, I can literally do anything. But the recovery aspects, you know, exponential. My biggest gains when I'm getting regular cryotherapy, you know, in terms of like, you know, just skin tightening even. I feel tighter, you know, it stimulates, you know, collagen production in the skin, you know, positive endorphins. You'll sleep the best you've ever slept. Like I said, either from cryotherapy or the ice bath. The ice bath is hard because when you've got the ice sort of touching your extremities, they can go numb. But when it's a chamber and it's sort of only 3 minutes, it's cold, but you don't have that touch on your extremities. You don't get the, like that numbness type thing. But again, it's about making, you know, do with, if that's something that's going to allow you to perform 10% better or recover 10% more, then it's probably worthwhile doing once a week, once a fortnight. You know what I mean? But again, you know, even cold showers in the morning, they can help, you know, be all before bed.
You time that around a particular workout? You time that after, say, after legs? You time that around a particular workout, say, after legs or after your back that you're trying to bring up?
So normally I would time that on the day of my last session before my rest day. So let's say I train legs today. In that afternoon or that night, I would do it, and then the next day, full recovery. Same with massage. I can never train after a deep tissue massage. I have to get my I have to train and then get my deep tissue massage, then ideally a rest day the next day. That is what has worked well for me, because I think that you forget that, excuse me, when you are, you know, you're training, you've got recovery demands for that. but also getting deep tissue massage and going through cryotherapy, like in a cryo chamber or in an ice bath, you'll burn up to 500 calories, maybe 1,000 calories in that 5 minutes, just from the body trying to stay warm. Okay. And so that also, you know, it's a demand on the central nervous system, because your CNS is saying, hey, what's going on? It doesn't recognize this environment. But also it's a demand, it requires a recovery. So too much of that and you'll crash as well. So you think about training legs, then having a deep tissue massage or a cryo, like your body's just going, I need a break. And so you have to give it that break. Yeah. And in the past, the one thing I've struggled to do is really take rest periods or take rest days. Even I can tell you right now, since I started training only 7 years ago, I've only ever taken a maximum of 2 days off the gym, and I was forced to by a coach. So no matter where I've traveled, no matter where I've been, there's been times where I've been selling, you know, solar panels in Billawheela, which is like, you know, 4 hours mid Queensland, and the closest gym was an hour and a half drive. And, you know, so I get up at 3 a.m., drive an hour and a half to the gym to do stairs for cardio, then have my oats in the car, nap for an hour, wake back up, do my training session, then back in, drive an hour and a half back to the motel, and, you know, enough to start my working day. So I've just, I've really struggled to take time out of the gym. But when I, obviously, as you grow, as you progress, as you advance and get stronger, you need to really, really prioritize recovery even more so. Because again, you know, although your muscles are, you know, maybe they're bigger, maybe they're more tolerant, the body's more tolerant, you know, maybe taking, you know, anabolics, which increases your recovery capabilities as well. And those things might differ from when you start to, as you progress and advance, but your central nervous system and these sort of things remain the same, you know, very much. And if you don't give yourself that time to recover, then again, that's when injuries can happen. That's when you crash. That's when you all of a sudden need to take a week out of the gym or 2 weeks out of the gym because you're so stuffed. So, you know, thinking that if you're young out there and you think you can train 6-7 days, double sessions, I've done it before with Milos Sasev. You know, we did 6 days training and then AM and PM sessions, you know, giant sets, you name it. And you can only do it for so long before you crash. So if you're young out there, don't be afraid to take an extra rest day here or there. Now, again, I'm the biggest one to say don't bitch out, so to speak, and take a rest day when you don't need one, because, like, you know, that's just, I don't think it's, I see a lot of that as well with some of my clients. I shouldn't say all of them, but some of them. And so I'm the first to say, hey, like, you know, do you really need to take an extra rest day? Did you need to take 4 days off the gym? You know, because I know I never have. And no, I'm no better than anyone else. So I think that ultimately, you know, again, listen to your body, yes, but be really honest with yourself as well. And again, you know, look for yourself in terms of what you were saying before, taking more recovery measures before or after certain body parts, certain sessions. I find the maximum benefit for me has been after my last session before a rest day. So I've got the next day to fully recover. And no real stress on the body at all, maybe some steps, but get the full day to be out of the gym, let the body rejuvenate, and then I heal again hard. And then the next day after rest day, that's when I'll hit my weakest body part. So the day after my rest day is when I'll hit my back, you know, because I want to be as fully charged, as fully primed as possible to give as much to that session as I can.
I've really enjoyed listening to this, because I've already gone for a walk in my head, and I've worked out where I'm going to go and buy my ice bath from, and have ice baths out, because there's no chance of there being a cryotherapy chamber out here, because the only 300 people live where I live. So, but I've already worked out which day and before my weakest body part, and it's already planned. So I've taken a lot out of this, because not a lot of coaches spend a lot of time or at the level of detail that you do around something which is absolutely critical, because, you know, no matter how hard you go in the gym, if you're not recovering, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, well, I think if you're not recovering, you're not going hard in the gym. You know, so it works both ways, because, yeah, if you're just smashing yourself for six sessions and you wonder why in 6 weeks you haven't increased your bench, you know, or whatever lift you're tracking, there's reasons around that, you know. And sometimes it's not just eating more food, because, you know, I found, honestly, when I've been force feeding seven, you know, almost 8,000 calories a day, clean food, no junk. Like, you know, it's a lot of food to get down. And like I'm waking up at, you know, 2 a.m. just to, you know, drink an oat shake and all this sort of stuff. And then I all of a sudden I drop back to 6,000 calories. And when I'm eating that almost 8,000 calories, my weight struggles to increase. It's like, you know, 127, maybe, you know, 128, 129. I drop back to 6,000. All of a sudden I'm 130, 131, looking better, looking tighter. And the point is, like, you know, the body can only really assimilate or use as much, you know, food as, you know, it can at any one time. So I found that, like, you know, just adding more food didn't really give me any more benefit. Dropping back the food, you know, I felt better. I wasn't as, you know, as down about, I have to eat every, you know, 2 hours, and actually improved. So again, most people say, well, if I'm not recovering, then I just need to add more food or add more drugs, which is, again, the wrong way to go about it. It's like, no, there's other areas I can look at. But it's not cool to, it's not cool to stretch. It's cool to just take more trend, you know what I mean? So why not?
Hey, you know, you're talking about eating 8,000 calories of clean food. You know, I pushed this off season and got to about 4,500, maybe slightly more. But how long did it take you in terms of progression to reach that amount? Like how many sort of calories were you pushing each year more than the previous?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. I think that, you know, in terms of my lean body mass, that's what really drove the amount of calories I needed to go up. So, you know, not the more I weighed, but the more lean muscle I carried. So, you know, it was progressive, as you just mentioned as well. It's like all of a sudden, you know, 5,000 calories just, you know, wasn't doing anything for me. And I needed to go to 5,500. I needed to go to 6. I think that also that matched in terms of my strength, in terms of everything else progressing as well. You know, I think that it can be a misconception amongst, you know, I don't want to say amateurs, in, you know, Australia, from what I notice, of thinking that bodybuilding is an eating competition. And, you know, the fact is that it's not. It's, you know, it's like, oh wow, you know, I wish I could eat 8,000 calories. It's like, you really don't until you have to do it every day. Yeah, you know, you might do it one day, I think, yeah, that was easy, but try it for 6 months. Like, you know, and you just get, I developed leaky gut from it, yep. You know, all types of digestion issues. You know, I became intolerant to beef, completely, just about. So like trying to find ways where I could eat more food has led me to, you know, totally restructure my digestion and ability. And I went through a phase of thinking, you know, like bigger is better. I just wanted to be as big as I could. You know, I wanted to, you know, weigh over 100 kilos, compete as a super heavy, because that was what I wanted to do when I was younger. And I probably, you know, I don't have any regrets, but if I look back, you know, would I've probably gone a little bit slower? Probably. I would have started earlier, number one. I would have gone slower in terms of my progression, because right now, you know, it's like, for me, you know, I have to eat that much, but then, like, I can't afford for my waist to get any bigger at the same time. You know, not if I want to have a career in the pros, which I do. That's my goal. So I'm sort of like, you know, fighting against it now. We're thinking, well, I've got the size, but I really need to maintain, you know, or not push out any further than what I can. So now I'm taking smaller progressions each time.
Just a thought there, and I'm sure the way you analyze things, you'll be all over this, but in terms of managing your digestive system, in terms of maximizing the uptake from the amount of calories, you know, because obviously if you're absorbing more at 6,500 calories than you are at 8,000, you know, would be towards your advantage in terms of keeping your waist small. So what sort of things do you do in terms of making sure that the amount of food you're taking in, you're getting as much of that as an uptake as possible?
So I found that sort of basic things like digestive enzymes, you know, HCL with pepsin, have been staples of mine for a long time. You know, having like a good quality, you know, green supplement powder, again, with digestive enzymes, but also with a lot of other, you know, digestive qualities. Consuming, you know, live raw foods as well, things like sauerkraut. You know, there's so many different flavors of sauerkraut these days that you can definitely find something that you like, but those help for me as well. You know, drinking enough water. I'm not drinking too much fluids with your meals, you know, so really separating your water and your meals. Like I try and eat a meal, then drink, you know, a litre of water, you know, half an hour before or half an hour after, if that makes sense. Because I think, you know, food and then water in the stomach just looks to expand even more. You know, definitely been big on things like, you know, vitamins and supplementation in general, bone broths, I found a lot of, you know, benefit from as well. And when I say benefits, you're not going to take a bone broth or a sauerkraut, you know, product, eat it and go, wow, like I feel amazing. But the thing is, consistently over time, it will assist. And then when you stop taking it, that's when you notice, like, oh, hang on a second, that's what it feels like without it. So realistically, yeah, choosing foods that that agree with your stomach, number one, you know, so trial and error there, obviously, over time, working out, you know, what's making you feel a certain way. The body gets really good at, like, at just surviving. And what I mean by that is it's like you can eat, you can be tolerant to eggs, but it might be intolerant so small, the body's like, you know what, I can deal with this. And the body finds a way, you know, subhanAllah, to just to make it work. Yeah. And, like, you know, that's a gift in the body itself. So we think, oh yeah, it's okay, we can eat eggs, but they might be causing us to hold, you know, a layer of fluid around any area. And that's just one example. So I think that really be in touch with what you're eating, trial and error things. Don't get emotionally connected to any food type. You know, my favorite food in the world was beef mince. You know, one protein source I could eat like as much as I wanted of, and no dramas at all. And I became intolerant to it from eating too much, simply. So now I can't have it at all, you know. But it was my favorite. So if I was really stubborn, I'd say, no, I'm just going to eat it, because I don't get any health, like, implications from it. I just get really bloaty and gassy, and it's uncomfortable. But I could probably just do it if I wanted to and just, you know, find a way to deal with that pain. But there's no need to, because it's just food. There's another type of food I can have. So now I get lamb backstrap mince, and that's my mince sauce. So I think that, yeah, choosing the food types that suit with you, you know, go with the basics, like I said, digestive enzymes, you know, having things like pineapple. So choosing foods that have digestive, you know, enzymes or qualities, you know, with them as well, like the sauerkraut, you know, like a good bone broth. And ultimately, you know, a good quality probiotic. I take mine on an empty stomach, so first thing in the morning. And, you know, realizing that filling your body with as much good bacteria as possible is important. I see a lot of people also who take a lot of pain meds, things like Nurofen or Panadol even as well, who have bad digestion. And I really think a lot of it comes down to, you know, the medication and the drugs. You know, I compete and I take, you know, anabolics, you know, under strict supervision from a coach and strict supervision from an endocrinologist in terms of my blood readings and blood work. But I choose to be as natural as possible in any other area of life. So if I have a headache for whatever reason, I won't take a Panadol and Nurofen, because I'm all about balance. I'm like, there's a certain level of things that I do at the moment that would be considered unhealthy. So I want to try and be as natural as I can in other areas. So I think that, you know, a lot of time when you mix those two, if that makes sense, it can cause underlying issues as well. And digestion.
100%, man, 100%. I think, you know, the anti-inflammatories are a big one. You know, a lot of people will rely on, you know, like your naproxens or your diclofenac and that. And I know that, you know, they're tough on your kidneys as well. And the last thing, you know, if you're on a decent cycle, you want to be doing is loading your kidneys with more issues, as well as the issues that you have with the gut lining and that, with those type of products. So absolutely agree in terms of mitigating risk.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, it's just about really understanding that, you know, we're not bulletproof, number one. And digestion is the key to everything. So, you know, I've read studies where as soon as clinically depressed people start improving their diets and, you know, digestion, that they almost cure themselves. The reason why is that because 90% or more of your serotonin production starts in your stomach, not in your head where you think it is. So, you know, everything that we intake goes through the stomach first. So there's more nerve endings in your stomach than there is in your brain. You know, it's crazy when you think about it, but it's such an important aspect, you know. And my job, or part of my job, is to eat. So it's like I've got to find a way to, you know, to make that as optimal as possible, you know, over a long period of time.
Awesome. Hey, we'll change tack for a bit, eh? I just thought, I found something just before. Where are we? Oh, bear with me. Right. Got Chicago coming up, guys. So, Mike Tabb, do you want to kick off with your top five for Chicago?
I'll be repeating what I've heard on other podcasts, I'm pretty sure. Hunter, is Akeem still doing it?
Doing oh, sorry. Rico? Sorry, man. I'm talking Puerto Rico. Rico. I'm talking Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico. My bad. Yeah.
Probably Akeem first then. I reckon Jamie might sneak in. He's looking pretty good. Top five anyway. I looked at the list really briefly. There was three or four names that I recognised, but no, I'd be just... I'll just be parroting what someone else says, so I'll leave it to the experts. Someone a bit closer, both you guys are a bit closer to being pro than me, so.
Mike, do you want to give us your top five?
Yeah, I think, look, in terms of, you know, previous competition histories, you know, Kim hasn't competed this season yet, so it's hard to know, you know, what shape it is. I saw a 9-day out, I think, picture of him as well, and he looks great. But the thing is, Kim on stage just looks, you know, he sort of, has this crazy, you know, lat pop from the front, you know, and just really, really muscularly dense and conditions normally pretty good. So in terms of, you know, the level of bodybuilders on that list, Akim's the winner, hands down. You know, then you got Hassan Mustafa, who, you know, is yet to peak. Hopefully he does this show. You know, he works with Chris Aceto, so I can't imagine they'll get it wrong for too long. In terms of this season, and he's sticking out the contest, so they must really want an Olympia berth. I'm excited to see the giant, Jamie, because I think for as tall as he is, he looks fantastic. You know, no one's beaten him in a front lat spread. It's phenomenal. But he's just got some really, really good, you know, lines now that, you know, it's sort of, you don't see him as just being a really tall, tall and stringy as some taller guys can be. So I'm excited to see him. I think that, you know, Eddie Bracamontes, Dorian Haywood, they'll round out your top six, if that makes sense. Muhammad Shaban as well, obviously. You know, but then Andrea, I think it's Muzzi from Italy.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, again, he just looks, you know, crazy on the gram anyway. Mm. So he's going to be interesting that when he stands next to someone, to see, you know, exactly where he lines up. Akeem's a front runner for me. I think Jamie will be a, you know, top two or top three from what I've seen. Again, it's just, you know, who knows on the day. And then Sam Mustafa's going to be fighting for that sort of, you know, 2-3 spot as well. And the rest will be made up by the Andre, you know, Mitzis, the Eddie Bracamontes, Dorian Haywood, and then the list will, you know, the rest of the guys, I wouldn't be able to sort of to tell you without seeing them.
Okay, I'll have my shot. I'm going Akeem, obviously. A little bit biased because I've met the guy and he's a great guy. Who do I have in second? I'm picking Muhammad Shaban or Hassan in second, third. Jamie, I'll put him in fourth. I'd love to see him break that top three. Really would love to see Jamie. He's made some fantastic improvements. Eddie and Dorian, they'll be scrapping it out, no doubt. The guy I'm interested to see is William Martins, a Brazilian guy. Seen a couple of photos of him, and he looks nuts by himself. But well, let's see what he looks like on the stage. Going to be a good one, though.
It's not a bad show. I mean, a lot of the shows so far have been, you know, a good maybe up to two or three or four, but there's been no real... I suppose, you know, outstanding. I think the people who should have won, you know, and there's no one who's really no deep lineup. So I think that hopefully with these later shows in the year, starting with this one, you're going to see a lot more depth to the field. And then leading to the Arnold, I think that, you know, that should be a big show as well. So although it's not Olympia qualifying, well, it is for the next year. So, you know, you have people in shape, maybe a couple weeks out, who will try and, you know, get the qualification for the next year as well under the belt. But I think this town should pick up a lot towards this, you know, latter end of the year leading to the Olympia. You know, I'm excited to see Ian up on stage. I think Ian's looking ridiculously big, and he should be in, you know, good condition because he normally always does. So, you know, the rematch between him and Hunter will be great.
Yeah. A bit of a dogfight. In the next couple of shows, because, you know, there are going to be some big names that miss out. We still haven't seen Rooley compete, so he's going to pop up somewhere.
Yeah, he'll be in one of those shows again. You know, it makes sense for Rooley to do the Arnolds, obviously. You know, for prize money, number one, for prestige, because, you know, Rooley's a top five bodybuilder at any show. You know, winner a lot as well. And then you've got, like I said, you know, that a lot of those other guys who, you know, are in there. I think that, you know, we've still got to see Kai Greene compete at some point. And that's something that, like, you know, Kai Greene was my favorite bodybuilder up until probably a couple of years ago. I was like, I'm just over his junk, yeah. You know. But, you know, he signed a contract with Redcon that says he has to compete at some point this year. So, you know, again, I'm just, you know, on the background. Not to, if you mentioned his name there, everyone sort of, you know, rolls their eyes, but it's exciting if he does compete, because, you know, I think that he'll, you know, bring something crazy to stage. And it's always good to see the best compete.
Yeah. It was a shame to sort of see him step away, but I guess, you know, everyone's got their reasons. And, you know, when he comes back, if he comes back, I'll be there watching.
I don't know if he could win again. I mean, Olympia, because of his age, and it's just so much has changed since. But who knows? Maybe he can, maybe he can't, you know. But Hunter looks crazy. Hunter looks, you know. I saw someone post the other day a picture of Lee Labrada from, I think, 92 or something, and looked amazing. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, aesthetic as great muscle bellies, you know, 190 pounds, there's nothing of him. Everyone's like, oh, this is why he's so much better than Hunter. But I'm like, for me, it's Hunter all day long. Like, Hunter is just, like, crazy big. he messed up his Olympia. I don't know what happened there. I think he had a Nolotol shot or something that went wrong with his pec. He saw that lump there. But I think that if he can, you know, bring condition like he's bringing now, and then he'll be, you know, definitely future O talks for sure. You know, I think more so than Nick Walker. Everyone's talking about Nick Walker, and, you know, Nick Walker is sort of more my physique than anyone else, because he's sort of like, you know, hasn't got a small waist, a lot of muscle on a frame. That and brings nasty condition, and that's what I can bring. So I should be his number one fan. And not that I'm not a fan, but I'm just like a bigger fan of Hunter Labrada. So I think that he looks crazy and he'll be hard to beat.
I'm just keeping my eye on the quiet Englishman who's sneaking in, very reminiscent of the Shadow.
James.
Yes. Yeah, can't wait.
I'm a big follower of James as well. I like, you know, he lifts heavy. You know, and he's a likable guy as well. Doesn't, you know, talk too much drama. Loves a laugh. And he should look great. You know, again, he's big, a lot of muscle, and gets in condition. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, Rami winning is a sign that, you know, you have classic bodybuilding, and that's the place for the shape and the prettiness of it all. And not that, you know, open bodybuilding can't be pretty, but it definitely should be still, you know, how much muscle do you have and how conditioned are you? If you're the biggest and most conditioned, you should win a show. And that's Big Rami. I mean, the biggest, was condition was great. He wins. You know, as much as others might have a slightly better shape or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, James big. And James gets in condition. So, yeah, he's definitely, dangerous.
Be interesting to see what another year of trying to etch that detail into Rami's legs look like. I can't imagine how many hours of scraping he's done this year.
Yeah, look, again, so details are one of those things, but I've been finding that, you know, my legs gain size pretty quickly when I started training them as hard as I did. The details now are starting to come through in terms of, like, you know, separation through, you know, sartorius into, you know, upper outer quad, you know, even upper lower quad, rec femoris. All that detail is now just starting to come through with, you know, muscle maturity, skin getting a bit maybe thinner as well. So it takes time to get the detail. You know, size is one thing, but then to have that detail, you know, and like the way that legs separate, like if you look at Lucky, the way that Lucky's legs separate from you know, he makes his legs look, you know, 4 or 5 inches bigger than what they are. So it's crazy when that detail comes through for sure.
Hey, look, we are going to do a wrap, but before we do, Mike, I really want to thank you for coming on board. And I think that people that watch this podcast will really learn a few things and see the importance of paying attention to those details. If you want to contact Mike, hit him on his Instagram. He's coaching, so he's do that. And Mike, as we always do on our show, we hand over to you to say thank you to anyone you want to thank, your sponsors, your friends, your family, those that have supported you along your journey.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks to you, Nate and Mike, for having me on. I appreciate the time to, you know, come and chat with you guys, share my experiences as well. It's something I'm very big on, passing on information, knowledge, and hopefully someone out there, not just yourselves, but someone out there can take some of this information and, you know, and put it to use and apply it to their life. So I appreciate the chance to be heard. So thanks for the platform. Thanks to my wife and family for supporting me always. They're number one, because again, you know, this, I think that a lot of times in bodybuilding, you know, you see people say that, you know, they can't have balance, they can't, you know, work and then have a family and bodybuild, and, you know, people end up sort of, you know, moving away from those things, so because they think that it takes away from them. But, you know, or when they're in a prep and they think that they've got to lean away from other people because they might, you know, get involved in a prep. But I think you've really got to understand that in times of those, you know, it's good to have people you can lean in towards for support, you know. So build an environment around yourself that's going to support what you want to do. I mean, understand that the more you give to them, the more they'll give back to you. So thanks to them for always being there. Huge for me. You know, TMJ, they've supported me as well over the years, you know, and realistically, anyone who I chat to and have worked with over the years, you know, my coach now, Dean McKillop, you know, I've built up a really great relationship with him. And it's first time in a long time where I really feel like the person who's coaching, guiding and helping me, you know, really cares about my results. And has got my best interest at heart. So I appreciate you, Dean, and Flex Success. All of my team as well, one team. I hope I'll make sure they get on and watch this and support you guys and follow and subscribe. But thank you also as well for, again, supporting me and allowing me to help you guys and be an influence in your lives. And look, realistically, guys, I'm just thankful, you know, for the opportunities I have. I think that, again, if I can send a message out to anyone, it's the fact that, you know, this day and age, we live such a lifestyle of wanting to impress or, you know, be a certain way or a certain standard based on, you know, what we see on Instagram and social media and all those other things. But the minute that you can really, really, I think, separate yourself from the fact of, you know, apart from the important people in your life, you've got no one else to impress. You've got no one else to have to do something for or be a person to that's going to serve anyone else's benefit, if that makes sense. So really, really be in touch with who you are. You know, the minute that you can be by yourself but not feel alone is the minute you know who you are. And then when you're truly true with yourself and you show love to yourself and those close to you, you know, you feel so much less pressure, so much less expectation in terms of what you have or have not to do. There's just something I see with a lot of, you know, people who I coach and help, but also peers in the industry as well. A lot of fakeness, a lot of people, you know, not being themselves for the sake of trying to impress someone. And so, yeah, I just think that, you know, the more that everyone can be real, be themselves, the better off, the better quality of life they'll have. So I hope that message helps some people as well.
Great message, bro. Great message. And really appreciate it. Hey, guys, thank you for watching. And we will catch up with you later in the week. In the meantime, stay safe out there and have a productive time in the gym. Thank you, people.
Yeah.